Good morning.
Good morning.
Few announcements this morning. A huge thank you goes out to all of the donors, bidders, bakers, volunteers that made our time, talent, and treasure auction a big success. We had a great turnout last night and great fun for our first live auction event. Although we are still tallying the final numbers, it looks like we have surpassed our fundraising goals. A special thanks to Lynn Smith, whose vision and leadership made it all happen. An early reminder that our annual LCUUC Thanksgiving potluck will be coming up on November 19th. It's time to start thinking about what you will bring to share and about joining with friends here at LCUUC to celebrate a day of joy and thanks. This morning's designated collection is for Heartland Food Pantry. So any loose coins and bills and any check with Heartland Food Pantry on the memo line will go to support them. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or what pronouns they use. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics you may have with you here today. Thank you.
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man's soul and faith. And I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you, hope you guessed my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Good morning and welcome to our service this morning. This morning we are talking about the name and the nature of evil. Every religion and every group of humans has some concept of what the dark side is, whether they call it that or not. It may be distance from a divine being. It may be refusal to adhere to divine laws or rules. It may be a deliberate decision of a human being to harm others or the planet for the sake of personal enrichment. It may be the willing choice to do harm and cause destruction. Because at its simplest, evil is a deliberate increase in the brokenness in our world. But inherent in any discussion of evil is its opposite, and that's why we are here. Healing and comfort and harmony and grace. Good is the intentional choice to repair the places where the world is shattered, and that is why we come together. Good isn't mindless adherence to some holy book or some set of laws handed down to you from up here somewhere. You know good. Good brings light when all other lights have gone dark. And we are here to shine a light in the darkness. So please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning. Our first hymn this morning is called Sanctuary, and it's about being that light for one another, being a sanctuary for one another when life is hard and it seems like there is evil in the world and it's too close to home. We've done this song at General Assembly and Regional Assembly, and it's fairly simple. The words are in your order of service. Make us aware we are a sanctuary, each made holy and loved right through. With thanksgiving, we are a living sanctuary anew. And we're going to do it through until we're singing loud. So the choir is going to start us so you can hear the melody. And join them just as soon as you can. Let's make some noise. And if you'd all rise for the hymn, please. Come on. Each made holy, loved right through, with thanksgiving. We are a living sanctuary of you.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Carol Whiteman, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As written in this month's edition of Touchstones, faith is a process that influences the way we live and makes it possible for us to live with meaning. Faith is a verb, not a noun. So whether your faithful journey is with us for the day or for a lifetime, we are glad that you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration. We're glad you have chosen to explore the good and to think about having a little sympathy for the devil, who gets blamed for the evil that humans do.
Introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many of man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands. Seal his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. But what's puzzling you is just the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was time for a change. Killed his arm and his ministers. His hand screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a general's rank, while the blitzkrieg raged and the body stank. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. But what's puzzling you is just a nature of my game. I watched with glee while your kings and queens fought in decades for the gods they made. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? When after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. And I lay traps for troubadours who get killed before they reach Bombay. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. But what's puzzling you is just the nature of my game. Whoa, get down here, man. To meet you, hope you guess my name. But what's confusing you is just the nature of my game. Every cop is a criminal, and all the sinners, saints, as heads and tails, just call me Lucifer, because I'm in need of some restraint. So if you meet me, some courtesy and some sympathy and some taste. Use all your well-earned qualities, or I'll lay your soul to waste. Pleased to meet you, won't you guess my name? But what's puzzling you is just the nature of my game.
I guarantee you're all awake now. I'd like to ask that all the children come up front for a story at this time. If you brought any non-perishable food items to share, please bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward for you as they're coming up. And we're going to go right into the center here. So let me ask you all a question. Do you know who this is? Anybody recognize this person? For those of you who can't see it from the back seat. Satan. So this is what some people say the devil looks like. What do you guys know about the devil? You know anything?
All red.
He's all red. He's evil. So he's a bad guy. Do you think he's real?
No.
No.
Obvious.
No. A long time ago, though, they used to tell kids that he was real. And that if you did anything bad, he would get you. And kids believed it. Does that sound reasonable?
No.
So I'm going to tell a story on a friend of mine who said if I used her name, hi, Erica, that I'd be in a lot of trouble. So when my friend Erica was a little girl, she grew up kind of like you guys. She went to a Unitarian church. They didn't talk about the devil. She wasn't scared of that kind of stuff. But she got invited to go to somebody else's church. And she went, and they told a really scary story about the devil coming to get you and someplace called hell with hot fire. And she went home and told her mom, and her mom said, oh, no, none of that's real. Don't be afraid. But she didn't listen very good. Now, I don't know about you guys. Did any of you guys ever do anything bad? We got one honest, two honest. Erica wasn't very good at behaving. And when she had gone to her friend's church, they told her the devil would get her if she did something bad. So about 2 days later, her brother took her dessert at lunch. What do you think she did? She popped him upside the head. Well, he yelled and he dropped the dessert on the floor. Her mom was so mad. And Erica went to her room and she thought, uh-oh, what if that story about the devil was right? What if I'm in trouble? So that night when she went to bed, her closet door was a little bit open. And she looked and she thought, I see horns in there. She looked the other way and she thought, I see a big scaly hand. I know it's the devil. She said, Mom, the devil's in my closet. Her mom said, what do you think? What do you think her mom said?
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't. Go to sleep. So she laid there for a minute. She heard something under her bed. She looked. And she just knew she saw a horn. And she said, Mom, the devil's under my bed. And what do you think her mom said?
No.
No. Shut up and go to sleep. So she took her hand. And she reached under the bed. And what do you think happened? Something grabbed her. And she went, wah! And she threw her arm in the air. And the cat, which is what had grabbed her, flew through the air and landed right on her. The cat wasn't really happy. What do you think her mom said to that one? Shut up and go to sleep. And she looked at the cat, and the cat looked at her, and she said, you know, I don't think the devil's under my bed. And I don't think the devil's in my closet. But I do think maybe I shouldn't hit my brother anymore, or I wouldn't lay here thinking that I was going to get in trouble. We're Unitarian Universalists, and that means that we don't think that there's some scary monster that's going to get you if you do something wrong. What do you do when you make a mistake or do something bad? What do? You fix it. You say, I'm sorry, and you make it better as best you can. And I promise you, there will never be a devil under your bed or in the closet, but I can't guarantee anything about your cat. Thank you all for listening to me today. And Kaya, could I have you come do the lantern for us? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. And if you all would help me sing the children to their classrooms, today we're singing them out to this little light of mine, and the words are in your order of service.
I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Well, I don't believe in some devil with horns and a tail. And I know that not everything in life is pleasant and good, but I also know that LCUUC provides a place where people can come to help create the warmth of community. It's a place where people can explore exactly what they do believe and how they believe it calls them to live in the world. It's a place we call ours, and a place that only exists because our lives and our work and our gifts make it exist. And because we're here, there is a little more good in the world. Because of each and every one of you, there's more kindness, more love, maybe a little more acceptance. There's good here because we work to be a source of good. And to continue that work, we need each and every one of you. Our morning giving ritual is not about seeing how much we can pocket, but it's a reminder that it's through our hands alone that we do this work and that we are all in it together. Give a little, at least a few pennies from your bag or your pocket, and I mean that seriously. Give a lot if you want. But it's to remind you that you are part of a community, if only for the day. Today, our designated collection is for the Heartland Food Pantry. So any loose coins and bills and any check where you write Heartland Food Pantry on the memo line will go to them. They are doing wonderful work. The morning offering will now be given and gratefully received. Thank you all for everything that you do and for these gifts given and received, for the life and the work of this community. You are so appreciated. We're all traveling together on a trip to parts unknown, and we're here in part to bear witness and to hold one another in the moments of our lives where maybe our journey takes a turn we didn't expect. We're a community of human hands and human hearts, and this is the time in our service where we minister to one another. We speak briefly about the good and the bad happening to us and to the world. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up and light a candle on our candle table here. But during the service, we speak aloud, and the worship associate lights our candles for us. So if you'd like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand, and one of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Candle of joy to have Jean Simpson here. She was one of the founders of this church, and it's great to have you.
It's wonderful to see all of you. I get choked up.
This is Amy. Just a candle of congratulations to Lynn Smith and Kristen Sandin for taking our auction to a whole new level, and I think last night was very fun and successful.
Hi, my name's Dave. Some of you know I'm a high school teacher, and I had a student, I teach at Waukesha West, and I had a student over there who's African American and who expressed some concerns with me about some racism that he experiences on a daily basis, and his mother and stepmother and things like that had also been speaking with me, and he felt the need to transfer to a different high school in the district because of what he was experiencing on a day-to-day basis, and I thought that was just sad, and I was sorry to see him go. He was a pretty good student. And so it's a concern for the racism that continues to exist in our society.
Hi, I'm Terry. Okay, just to piggyback a little on what Dave said, earlier this week, a friend of mine and I went to see the movie called Marshall, about Thurgood Marshall, and about the early years of his life when he was the only black lawyer that was representing the NAACP. And at the end of the movie, I have to say, I was just weeping for our country and how hard those people worked in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and that, you know, we have been moving forward little by little, and just how devastatingly sad it is, the direction that our country is going, and also how grateful I am to be a part of this community that has this values that I believe will help our country to move in the right direction.
Hi, my name is Beth. Our daughter Maya landed safely in India this past week and has transferred over to her new city where she's going to be until the 20th, studying and working. And we're just, I guess, a candle of hope that her journey continues to go well and that she has just a wonderful experience in India.
This is Claire. I have actually two joys and a concern. My concern is one of my employees, her niece's husband was in a very tragic car accident this past week, to the point of they can't recognize his face because the accident was so bad. He's been on life support. They've done a couple of surgeries already to repair some stuff, but it's just a really bad situation, and I hold her in my heart. My first joy is my cousin Brittany turned 40 this past week, and we've been really the best of friends. She lives in California, and I'm really happy for her. And also, my brother has returned home safely from his trip in Nepal, and he has shared some pictures on Facebook of his experiences hiking and not summiting Everest, but at least getting to Everest Base Camp and summiting the surrounding areas to get some wonderful pictures. He had some great weather, and I'm glad he's home safe. Thank you.
Hi, this is Joanne, and a candle of joy. For the last maybe 2 months or so, we've been holding meditation on Sunday mornings before church at 9 o'clock for a half hour. And that is just a candle of joy because I find it such a special time to be together with church members meditating.
This is Bud and Sarah, and we haven't been here for a few weeks. But Doug, we're absolutely delighted to see you here directing the music group.
This is Al. Two seats to my left is Jean Simpson. She's one of the four. Oh, Karen did this?
I said she's a coffee
member. Yes, well, one of the four. Okay, so. Hi.
This is Mike, just a little addition to Amy's story for all ages. Cats are pure, unrepented evil.
I've noticed. And we're going to light our last candle today for and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply in our heart, but which we haven't been able to name here today.
This is the first reading from Nature of Evil by Reverend G. Jude Geiger. Evil, sin, is found when we fail to honor our essential interdependence, when we throw compassion away. It's found both in acts of harm that are obvious to our sense of morality and in acts of neglect. Sometimes through complicity and sometimes through apathy, we come to witness evil. But evil does not describe everything bad that we do. Humans make mistakes. Sometimes we're jerks. Sometimes we're short of temper. Sometimes we're flippant or rude. Sometimes we forget to recycle that can of soup. Sometimes we don't tip our waiters. Evil is a word I prefer to reserve for bigger crimes against life. The smaller things are the smaller sins or errors of our way. Moving forward, though, I'm going to stick with using the word sin to describe the smaller human errors, the smaller intentional errors. Calling a bad deed an error or a mistake is sometimes appropriate, but sometimes it sounds like we're talking about a math problem and not a human crisis. Separated from the notion of original sin and heavenly judgment, neither of which I believe as a universalist, the concept of sin is still relevant. Sometimes we wrong life in small and big ways, intentionally or not, through our actions or through our lack of actions, and that's sinful. The greater autocracies that humans perennially perpetuate are grounded in the abject loss of any human sense of interdependence. Evil separates you from me. It teaches us that we are alone in this world and that it's okay to act from that sense of separateness. On the small scale, being an island to oneself leads to greed, hate, fear, or envy. Each prop up the ego, strengthening the ego's identity through isolation or groupthink. Taken to the extreme, these sins lead to horror. It's a sobering reason to check ourselves when we succumb to the smaller voices, lest they rule us. In liberal religious circles, we have propensity toward accepting human goodness in the face of the reality of evil. As universalists, we moved away from original sin, so we try to throw out all that relates to it rather than look the difficult parts in the face. One can refuse to believe in the essence of evil while still recognizing the practice and experience of evil. Hatred that ruins lives, fear that endangers lives. They're not mistakes. They're not errors. They're a perversion of life. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation, reflection, or the spirit of prayer.
The second reading is from The Nature of Evil by Terry Eagleton. Our second reading today looks at a modern theology of evil. You could easily replace the word God in this place of the word. You could easily replace the word God in this piece with the word community. See what you think of what Eagleton says. Young people in the West these days have become very interested in zombies and vampires and other forms of so-called undead. And I think this has a bearing on what I'm saying about good and evil. Zombies and vampires exist in some twilight, interdeterminate zone between life and death. And the same is true for those who are evil. They can only manage a kind of sham, inauthentic life, a ghastly parody of genuine life. And they derive this life from their own sufferings and from the sufferings they inflict upon others. This dreadful state of being is what it means to be in hell. Though they cannot literally actually be anyone in a place called hell, any more than you can be in a place called love or disgrace or despair. Hell means not perpetual punishment, but absolute extinction. The fire of hell is God himself with his relentless, terrifying, uncompromising love. God is a terrorist of love. And though this fire is the life and love of God, there are those who can't take this love, the wicked, who detest and despise it, and who are burnt to a cinder by it. Only in being in Autocritus' pain can the evil persuade themselves that they are still alive. This is why they cling perversely to their sufferings, since without them they would be dead. They would rather cling to the obscene enjoyment of forcing others and themselves to suffer, which is a kind of nothingness, an inability to live truly, rather than risk the much more terrifying nothingness of abandoning themselves, in the faith that out of this kind of nothingness, something positive, some new life, may finally emerge. The wicked are terrified of giving themselves away and cling to themselves for dear life as if to a lover. This is why the damned or undead are said to be both despairing and exultant, miserable and mocking. They relish their agony because it's the only way of existing in spite of God's eye, because his ruthlessness, intolerable love, risks removing their torment and along with it, their identity. The damned are like an alcoholic who is so ravaged by drink that he can gain a spot in illusory relief only by stepping up his intake, thus shattering himself even more autocrously. Like the damned, the alcoholic is in the grip of what Freud called the death drive. And the true perversity of this drive is not that we are hell-bent on destroying ourselves, but that we do so because we are persuaded to take pleasure in the act of tearing ourselves apart. And that really is diabolical. The demonic is a kind of cosmic sulking, since comfort and forgiveness would be its undoing. The philosopher Kierkegaard sees the damned as those who refuse to relinquish their despair, since this would relieve them of their rebellious delight in rejecting creation altogether. There is something adolescent about evil. Here ends the second reading. If hell is removal from divine connection, whether that connection is God or goddess or human community, that opposite of hell is entering a community of caring. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1021 in the Teal hymnal, Lean on Me.
Sometimes in our lives,
I think sitting here in these seats, every single one of you has seen images like the one I showed the kids this morning. The devil has become part of our culture, regardless of which religions he started with. And the image that our culture has absorbed leans toward the Christian devil. Now, in Judaism, the devil doesn't work quite the same way. He's not some horned, fanged, goat-footed person walking around scaring children. In Judaism, the devil is the ultimate advocate. He works for God. His job is to challenge things when God might be screwing up. The devil's job is to say, hey, I don't think you thought about that very well. Let me see if I can break it. But in Judaism, he works for God. He's not the boogeyman, he's an employee. There are multiple angels in Judaism that are much scarier than the devil. I don't want to meet Michael on a dark night. He's got a big sword. But sitting here in these seats, coming from a myriad of different backgrounds, we've seen the cultural devil that our cultural gestalt has absorbed. Some of us have some theological grounding in what we think the epitome of evil is like. Some of us don't. Some of us have only seen him on South Park. You can call him Mephistopheles. You can call him Scratch or Old Nick. You can call him Lucifer. Children's cartoons and films and TV shows show us decisions made by what? An angel on this shoulder? And a devil on this one, urging you on, do it, don't do it, do it, don't do it, do it. And we're used to that image, and we're used to the excuse, the devil made me do it. When you have no idea why you screwed up that badly, all you can say is, yeah, it must have been the devil, because I sure wouldn't have done that, right? We see Satan on everything from album covers to South Park, to children's cartoons. And outside of horror movies, he isn't the boogeyman he used to be, because our cultural understanding of evil has changed over 300 years. In 2014, the Cantor Art Center at Stanford did a new exhibit. It was called Sympathy for the Devil: Satan, Sin, and the Underworld. And they did 40 images from 500 years of artistic portrayal of the devil, the most famous fallen angel. And people were shocked to see that he hadn't always looked quite the same way. Where does this cultural image of evil come from? The devil isn't described in any holy book. If you go back through and you read that Bible, it doesn't say anywhere that he's got big horns, that he is a he, that he has a tail. He especially doesn't have the little pitchfork. So how do artists figure out what to paint? How did the devil go from being a hairy, goat-like demon to looking like the person next door? There's an article by Carrie Dunn, and they interviewed museum curator Bernard Barreit, and he told them, look at TV shows and look at movies from the last several seasons. Humans have a natural curiosity about horror. And that made me perk up my ears. I thought, wait a minute, are you saying that the devil was the original scary movie? Well, not quite, but the devil kept you from screwing up. The devil was a way to keep you in line. And to do that, he had to be scary. He had to look like the other, the outsider. And we picked him up, and he looked like a beast. He had teeth and fangs. But then the article goes on to say, this intrigue with horror is projected onto the bestial demon. But as centuries went on, artists started rendering the personification of evil as something that I found even more scary. They turned the devil into one of us. No longer did he have the horns. He didn't have Pan's cloven feet anymore. He didn't have the dancing and the drinking of Dionysus. That's where all of that came from. They took the pagan gods and they said, we don't want you following them, so we're going to make them the ultimate in evil. And Christians believed that the devil was an embodied being who interacted with people or who sent his minions to whisper in your ear. He was an opposite to the Christian God and all its works. He was an unmaker. He was a destroyer. He was a perverter of everything that people held dear. But by the 21st century, Satan had moved. He had grown. He'd become a TV star. In horror movies, he was just another boogeyman. They could have called him anything, just a monster, no theology. Cartoons gave him the horns and the cape, something to laugh at. But then the films made him witty. They made him sophisticated. They made evil beautiful. The devil's advocate, Al Pacino, in his perfect Italian suit, hissing, piercing eyes. They made evil attractive. And they made a point about evil that nothing with horns and a tail could make. Evil is human. Evil hides in the guise of beauty. And for Pacino, he looked just like us until something made him angry, and then the true face of evil. The ugliness of evil came out. Evil looks just like us, and the devil didn't make me do it. I just let the devil take the blame. In 2017, theologically, humans have become the source of evil. We recognize and we own it. But if our concept of the face and the source of evil have changed, has evil itself changed? Or more specifically, is evil a thing? Does it exist? And if it is there, what's our obligation to it? Our roots come from Christian universalists who say quite clearly there is no such thing as original sin. Everyone eventually can be returned to the love and grace of the divine. We are not born broken. We are not born removed from all that is good and perfect in the universe. So if evil can't be defined as acting against the will of God, how do we define it? Let me give you a working definition. This is my definition. Take it or leave it. Create your own. Evil is anything which takes delight in the knowing destruction of another. Evil is the desire to cause an increase in the brokenness of the world, purely for the sake of doing so. Evil hurts and it enjoys hurting. Evil is deliberate. Evil is relational. Evil devalues people. To quote Terry Pratchett, evil starts when you begin to treat people as things. Now, Aristotle said that ethical knowledge is not some kind of theoretical thing. And this wounds us as Unitarian Universalists because we want to read about it first. We're ready to study it. But Aristotle said to become virtuous, you can't simply study it, you just have to go be virtuous. He writes, we're not studying in order to know what virtue is, but to become good. For otherwise, there's no profit in it. It doesn't do you any good to know what good is if you're not doing it. Virtue has to be a habit. You have to work at it. Because for Aristotle, at least, being virtuous lets you live more fully. Deeds, not creeds. Living well, living ethically, regardless. I don't know what's in your head. I know what you do. Doing evil is making a mess out of life. Doing evil is being anti-life, anti-human. Now, each and every one of us has stood in the presence of evil in our own lives. It's the voice whispering in your ear that says, go ahead and do it. No one will ever know. Go ahead and do it. It's too much of a problem to do it right. Just go ahead. It's fed with hatred. It's founded on fear. It thrives best in a world that tells us over and over that we will never be enough. People are not born evil. The idea of wickedness comes as people deliberately throw away the joy of living deeply and well and truly for a quick return of some kind of perceived reward. Evil takes what it doesn't deserve, and more than that, it delights that someone deserving was deprived because of it. In The Nature of Evil, literary critic Terry Eagleton says, the wicked are those who just haven't developed the knack of fine living, those who botch the business, as you might make a mess of cooking an omelet. The wicked, then, are inept. They never really get the hang of human existence. They're like poor artists who can't knock themselves into shape. The good, the virtuous, are those who, like good artists, realize their power and energy and capacity in the full, in as diverse a way as possible. And because of this, they are brimming with life. With this model, to ask why be good is as ridiculous as saying, well, why enjoy a dark, full-bodied pint of Guinness? Be good because it feels virtue is a kind of energy. And I would say to you, whether you say God or community or the higher nature of humanity, it doesn't matter to the metaphor here. The idea is the same. If God or community or higher humanity is that overflowing well of love and energy that you can tap into, evil is saying, I don't want any part of that. I want to unmake it. I want to throw that away. I don't want creation. I want the opposite. That is evil. Reject evil, not because of some holy book, but because it is the shallow reflection of life. It's the appearance and not the reality. So when Mick Jagger and the Stones tell you that what's puzzling you is the nature of the game, they're speaking the truth, because you see, in that respect, the Christian Bible has it right. Evil lies. Evil deceives. Evil tells you that what matters is the appearance. Evil tells you that having the creed is more important than the deeds. It tells you that claiming a belief, that studying a belief, is more important than having it. Evil says you don't have to live it, just as long as you say it. Evil says it doesn't matter how you get there, step on anyone you want, just get results. Evil tells you to throw away what's important so that you can look as if you've done well. Evil says it's a zero-sum game, and that in order for you to win, everyone else has to lose. Evil tells you to cheat. When the song says, "I hope you guess my name," it reminds us that evil assures us it's never our own name we guess. We never want to be the villain. So what do we owe the devil? What do we owe the person who delights in doing evil? All people have worth and value, but not all actions are worthy or valuable. Some are destructive and vicious, merciless and cruel. People are not evil, but their behaviors damn sure may be. And it's up to us to say no. We owe them sympathy because they have lost the finest, the dearest, the best things in life. But after we sympathize, then what? We renounce evil in all of its forms. We claim better for ourselves. We claim the best that life has to offer, the fullest. We identify evil. We call it by its name. We don't pretend that it's somehow okay. We reject it. We defend against it. We destroy the unmaking that it does, and we build up instead. We work to heal the world. We kindle a light each time evil brings darkness, and we refuse to let the darkness overcome it. We draw our circle wider, and we shelter the tired and the cold and the frightened. We draw our circle wider, and we comfort the poor and the imprisoned and the homeless. We draw our circle wider, and we work to welcome all into that chance at wholeness and love. We draw our circle wider, and we say there is no place inside for hatred and destruction, but that you can leave those things at the door. We'll let you leave them at the door, and our door is always open. Just leave those outside. No matter who you are, come in anyway. We'll help you leave them outside, but you can't bring them in here. The door is open. So kindle a light, draw the circle wide, and have a little sympathy for the devil. Amen.
May we always find it in our hearts to have sympathy for one another. May we call one another into the circle of love and community. And may we burn so brightly that evil can find no place to hide. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, "Draw the Circle Wide." The words are in your order of service. Doug, do you have any specific directions for us?
Yes. Let's make a circle.
Go in joy to love and serve the world. Pray for peace. Pray for each other. Work for justice. No compassion. Have some sympathy for the devil. Peace, and may it be so.